Get ready to hear the truth about America on a show that's not immune to the facts with your host, Dan Bongino.
Welcome to this special weekend podcast we do for you every other weekend. We like to highlight some of the really great interviews we do on the radio show. It's not due to me, but great guests, and you deserve to hear from them. If you'd like to listen to the radio show live, go to Bongino.com any weekday. Click on Station Finder to find out where there's a station near you. We've got a great lineup for you this weekend as well. Let me get to our first sponsor. Hey, are you tossing and turning at night, unable to catch those elusive Z's? Trust me, I've been there. It's not just about feeling tired the next day. It's about the toll poor sleep could take on every aspect of your life. But guess what? There's hope on the horizon. It comes in the form of Beams Dream Powder. Let me tell you, this stuff's been a game changer. Love it. See, when you're sleeping well, we can be sharper, more focused, and ready to tackle whatever life throws our way. Today, my listeners get a special discount on Beams Dream Powder, their science-backed hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar. Better sleep has never tasted better. Other sleep aids can cause the next day grogginess, but Dream contains a powerful, all-natural blend of reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, apigenin, and melatonin to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. You want to try Beams' best-selling Dream Powder? Get up to 40% off for a limited time when you go to shopbeam.com/Bongino and use code Bongino at checkout. That's shopbeam.com/Bongino and use code Bongino for up to 40% off. First up is our interview with the RNC's Laura Trump about changing the broken culture at the RNC and making it about winning elections again. That's kind of what they're supposed to do. That's the purpose of our political parties, to win, right? It's not a treehouse club. And the steps being taken to elect President Trump. It's a good interview. Check it out. Really happy to welcome to the show just a really terrific person all around. Someone I actually knew before politics, either of our time in politics, when she was had her own independent life going, and ran into later. Laura Trump, welcome to the show. It is so great to have you. We really appreciate
it. Thank you. Thanks, Dan. Yeah, I know. Before we got caught in this crazy whirlwind of politics.
I know. I tell that story to everyone. Yeah. You had your own separate career going, doing reporting. And I had you had reached out to me for an interview about some Secret Service thing. I always tell the story how you called one time after when me, you and Eric were going to go have some dinner at Mar-a-Lago or something. And you came up with your original maiden name. I'm like, who the hell is this calling me? I had no idea.
Crazy person is stalking me.
It was you. And I'm so glad to see you. One of the best decisions the Republican Party has made in a long time. Co-chair of the RNC with Michael Wadley, another great guy. And man, you both turned that operation around pretty quickly. And I say this as a friend, but most importantly, as a strong conservative, a lot of people in the know who understand the mechanics of politics have said it's amazing how quickly you guys got in there and sensed what was going on and righted that ship. So when you got over there, if you could sum up for the audience, what were the biggest problems you saw that required you and Michael to say, hey, we got to fix this quick. We got an election coming up.
Yeah, well, we had no time to waste, as you just point out. We are 6 months away from, I would say, the most consequential election of our lifetimes. And I know people say that every 4 years, Dan. It's not hyperbolic to say that right now because you can feel what's going on. And so, yeah, I think people saw day one, you know, we did a lot of staffing changes. We have fully now integrated the campaign and the RNC as one entity. And this will be my third presidential election cycle. Shocking to say, because I'm only 20 years old. I'm just kidding. Don't tell anyone that election cycle. But prior to this, we always worked alongside the RNC at the Trump campaign, but we never were one solid entity. And so now we have combined forces, and there is no daylight between these two organizations. The beauty of that is we don't have two people doing the same job. We have one person doing one job, and we're paying only one person to do it, so the money goes farther. We reviewed all the contracts and vendors. We wanted to ensure that we were getting the best pricing, of course, for everything. Nobody getting kickbacks, no special treatment, none of that nonsense. We're here to do a job, and that is to win an election. And then I think, you know, you look at things like election integrity. I mean, there's no doubt that at the RNC, that is our top priority. Obviously, we have to get out the vote, and we have the best candidate in Donald Trump to do that for us. We also have to protect that vote. And so we are pulling out all the stops. We have an election integrity division right now. And we are putting all of our forces into this because, you know, we can never see 2020 happen again. We have to fight fire with fire, and we can't assume we're going to play the same game the same way every single year and think we're ever going to win because, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. We are going to be legally ballot harvesting. We are going to make sure that people understand the importance of early voting, of voting any way you possibly can. By the way, if anyone wants to be part of our election integrity division, protectthevote.com. We would love for you to come work on as part of our team. And so we just look, we have to look at this thing very in a common sense way, Dan, I think. And that's what Chairman Whatley and I did when we came in here. We said, we've got to, you know, fix the staffing issues. People who maybe shouldn't have been here, they are gone, and we are integrated with the campaign fully. We're paying attention to getting people out to vote, but protecting the vote and ensuring election integrity. And, you know, the rest, everybody has seen, I think, what we've done, and we've done it in pretty quick order.
You have. We're talking to Laura Trump, protectthevote.com. You should all go there today. We have a responsibility to participate in this election, and not just by voting, but by gathering other people to vote and doing whatever we can. Folks, it requires money. It requires door knocking. You know, Laura, one of the things I had argued for years, and a lot of people didn't like this take, but having been a candidate myself, I understood it. A lot of times I'd hear from people, you know, Donald Trump should run as a third party candidate. You know, the Republican Party is generally useless. And while in some cases it can be in some politicians, I said to people, no, that's a mistake. I mean, we built this. Like, the party has actual tangible assets that are worth things. It has mailing lists. It has voter data. It has ballot access. These are our things. We're the Republicans, me and you and all of these listeners. The Republican Party is not some, you know, otherworldly Zeus-like entity. It's us. And we paid for that. And I said to people, no, we're not forfeiting that to anyone. To go what? Start another party and have to raise a bunch of money to build what we already built? We should take back that thing. You sense that happening right now in this, you know, this era of MAGA, Donald Trump politics, where people are like, you know, enough's enough. Like, that's ours, and we're just going to take that back.
Yeah, well, this is Donald Trump's party. I mean, he changed the face of politics, but he also changed this party. And he is the leader of our party. He is our nominee for president. And we take our cues from him. And certainly, I think what you're saying is exactly right. Look, at the RNC, we have assets around the country that it would take decades to put in place if you were to try and replicate an organization like this. So you're exactly right. We have the ability to spend money a little differently than a campaign ultimately would. You know, you look at advertising and how powerful that sort of thing is. There are a whole host of reasons that it's very important to support our party. And this party is now fully Donald Trump's party. And so anyone who ever had any question about that as to whether or not the RNC was fully supporting this candidate or how it was operating, you know, look, I'm here. This is my last name. And Dan, you know, I get kicked out of the family if I do something wrong. I'm just kidding. Truly, it's there's really no question about that. And I think that that you are seeing that people come around to that idea that this is now a bit of a different party. And I think it's great because I think we have an ability right now to expand the tent of the Republican Party. You look around the country at voting blocks that the Democrats have thought they owned forever. Look at the youth vote. If you were to hold the election right now today, 18 to 24-year-old voters, Donald Trump would win with that voting block. The Democrats are going crazy over this. You look at the African-American vote, Hispanic vote. These are people right now who are saying, enough is enough. I've been told I have to vote for the same party my whole life, as my parents did, as my grandparents did. And they're taking a second look right now because things are so bad in this country. People feel every single day that what they're being told by Joe Biden and by the Democrats is not what they're seeing in their everyday life. They have less money in their pocket. Our streets don't feel as safe. We have an open southern border. The world stage, we're being laughed at. We are on the verge of World War III. And so this is the time to open up the tent, to bring people into this party. And that is another big focus we have at the RNC right now.
We're talking to Laura Trump. Laura, you're around your father-in-law, President Trump, all the time. So you obviously have access. Most of us don't. But that there's a tremendous benefit to that, in that you get a unique insight into what a guy who won the presidency out of nowhere, no history with politics at all outside of just, you know, saying he'd run in the past, jumps in his first race, he wins the presidency. And I think you can attest to this better than anyone. I've spoken to him not nearly as much as you have, and I'm certainly not name-dropping at all. But he is, I would almost borderline say, obsessed with the idea of expanding the Republican tent. Because he is new to politics, he doesn't understand, I think, and this is a good thing, why we do so terribly amongst Black and Hispanic voters. He's like, economic freedom, protecting, you know, the church and human rights and faith-based organizations, you know, school choice. These are things that really resonate. And I love it that he doesn't limit himself. He's almost obsessed with this idea. Have you kind of taken that mission in the RNC and run with it? Because if we move the needle on the Black and Hispanic vote, just a couple of points, Laura, you know it. There's simply no math for the Democrats to win. Zero.
No, it's game over for them. And that's why you see them really in panic mode right now. They have a huge problem on their hands. Not only do they have a horrific candidate in Joe Biden. I mean, this guy has the lowest approval rating of any incumbent in history. And no one with an approval rating this low has ever won re-election. So not only do they have Joe Biden, they got to run. Their policies are terrible. And you're right. Donald Trump doesn't care about the way it's been done in the past.
Right.
He cares about winning. And look, this is the guy who you have to think back to the way people used to treat Donald Trump, and people wrote rap songs about him. He was basically the epitome and the best example of the American dream back before he came down the escalators in Trump Tower and announced he was running as a Republican for president. And so he's never looked at things the same way that I think a traditional politician would, and that is a great thing. We need more of that kind of energy. So he doesn't limit himself. He doesn't say, hey, you know what? I can't go to a bodega in Harlem because I'm not going to be welcome there. He says, hell yeah, I'm going to go to a bodega in Harlem.
That was an amazing moment.
And that's what happens when he shows up. Yeah. And by the way,
that was an amazing moment. Yeah, please.
Yeah, get ready to see more of that, because that is exactly what you're going to see out of Donald Trump this campaign cycle. The Democrats are terrified because Joe Biden in his wildest dreams couldn't get one one-hundredth of the people to show up outside of a bodega for him.
We're talking to Laura Trump. One follow-up, one more quick question. I'll let you go. I appreciate your time. But, you know, my prior line of work, that those off, they're called OTRs, as you want, yep, off-the-record movements, which happens. Those are not scripted. And the fact that Joe Biden, he can't do that because there's too much of a risk. And your father-in-law, President Trump, he is so confident that these people are fed up with Biden. He's like, what's the most Democratic area of New York City? Let's go to the Bronx. And everybody's like, four more years. Meanwhile, Joe Biden can't even go to his sheets. He goes to his sheets in Pennsylvania. He's supposed to be the Scranton kid. And they're like, why is Reverend Cain in here? Like, no, from Poltergeist. Like, nobody even knows who he is. But one last follow-up, because I'm getting to my Facebook audience wanted me to ask you this. A lot of people are concerned with mail-in ballots. Unfortunately, we're stuck with the system. I think you and I both wish that it was an election day thing. We'd all show up and show ID. But that's not the world we live in. I wish it were. I bet you do, too. But that's not it. We're stuck with, yeah, a lot of these liberal states that love mail-in ballots. But if we're going to be stuck with that system, we damn well better play the games they do and go chase those people and get them the vote and make sure it's as secure as possible. Does the RNC have their eyeballs on this? Because I'm getting tons of questions. Ask Laura about mail-ins.
Absolutely. And look, you're right. We would love to see one day of voting. We would love, paper ballots, and we'd love voter ID all across this country. And we can get back to that place, but it's going to require Donald Trump as president, us to expand our lead in the House and take back the Senate. And then, yes, let's fix this, because this is crazy the way that we're doing it right now. But you're right. This is the hand we're dealt. So we have to play that hand right now. And if we have to deal with mail-in ballots across the country, we better own the mail-in ballots then. We do have our eyes on this. We have a unique opportunity right now at the RNC that we haven't had for about 40 years. There was a moratorium on poll workers. These are not just watchers, but people who work in the polling locations, the tabulation centers where the mail-in ballots come in. We now can train those people via the RNC to work in these locations. We couldn't do it for 40 years because there was a moratorium on it. The judge who passed this decision died last year. So now that has been lifted, and we have this unique opportunity right now. Everyone should want us to have the most transparent elections possible, an independent Republican, Democrat, no matter who you are. And so we have a great opportunity to do things now that we never have before. We have our eyes on this. We have 81 lawsuits out right now in 24 states. Some of those lawsuits are specifically to make it harder to cheat and easier to vote. We just won a big lawsuit a couple weeks ago in Pennsylvania. The Democrats, of course, in an effort to make it easier to cheat, wanted to take any sort of dating off of the mail-in balloting. We said, you can't do that. We sued them. We won. And now that will be the precedent across the country. We can apply that to every single state. We're working overtime on all issues, mail-in balloting, early election, legal ballot harvesting. Believe me, we have our eye on this. And yes, we're going to have to play this game differently if we want to win. And I can assure you this election cycle, that's exactly what we intend to do.
Laura, how can people help you? Again, we're talking to Laura Trump. What's the website? How can people help or donate to your the cause right there at the RNC? And how can you help? How can they help organize?
ProtectTheVote.com. If you want to volunteer, we're asking for volunteer attorneys as well, because we want attorneys in every major polling location across the country. If you want to donate, look, we're proud to say that we've been raising around $1 million a day that Donald Trump has been stuck in that courtroom in Manhattan. And we want to keep that going. We've got to send a message loud and clear out there. You cannot use these communist tactics in the United States of America. They will not stand. We're backing Donald Trump. DonaldJTrump.com, GOP.com. Anything you can donate always helps us, always goes a long way. We know the Democrats have their Soros machines out there. They have all the funding in the world. So we appreciate the support. We appreciate the help. Come volunteer with us. Let's leave nothing to chance. Let's go win this big league, as Donald Trump likes to say on November 5th.
You're very humble about it. As someone who's run for office, folks, I'll do the tough job. But money matters, man. And anyone telling you otherwise is absolutely lying to you. It absolutely makes a difference. It makes a difference. Laura Trump, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for what you're doing at the RNC. We really appreciate it.
You're the greatest. Thank you, Dan.
No, you got it. Laura Trump, folks, what an amazing woman. Really, very talented, amazing woman. She's doing a great job at the RNC. We're happy to have her. Up next, another one of our better interviews from the week, but let's talk about our next sponsor first. Hey, have you heard of cancer-fighting foods? It's been reported that diets rich in fruits and vegetables may actually lower your risk of cancer. Obviously, something very personal to me. Hopefully, you hear this and run to the store for 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. That's what you should do. And Miles will tell you that. Problem is, most of us don't have the time. Fruits and vegetables can be perishable. So I'm just telling you to try out Field of Greens for your daily health regimen. It's kind of my fruit and vegetable insurance. Field of Greens, every vegetable and fruit was selected by the doctors for studied benefits. What your body needs is in each scoop of delicious Field of Greens. It's the simplest way to get all those daily fruits and vegetables and nutrition the way nature intended. I love it. I take it twice a day. Field of Greens, will it prevent, treat, or cure cancer? No, it's not going to do that. These guys aren't going to smoke you up. But it's powerful, and it promises that your next checkup, your doctor will notice your improved wellness or your money back. That's right. If you don't love the product, Brickhouse Nutrition will give you 100% money back guarantee. That's how confident they are. That's how confident I am. I've had this product with my sponsor for a long time because I love him. I had a role in getting this thing developed. I got you 15% off and free rush shipping. Go to BrickhouseNutrition.com/Dan. Use promo code Dan at checkout. That's promo code Dan at BrickhouseNutrition.com/Dan. BrickhouseNutrition.com/Dan. Make sure you check it out. Field of Greens. This is a wide-ranging interview with Dinesh D'Souza, one of our most popular guests, about the protests on college campuses and who's really behind them and what they're trying to do with this destabilization. It's a good interview. Give it a listen. Happy to have Dinesh D'Souza on the show. Dinesh, welcome back.
Thanks, Dan. Always a pleasure.
We did a movie together called Police State. Really enjoyed the process. Learned a lot about what's going on with this police state. Now, Dinesh, you're one of these guys. You've been, a real teacher to me for a long time. I watched your videos when I first got into politics where you would go on to college campuses and debate. And I think you understand this totalitarian left better than anyone out there right now. And what I've been trying to get across to my audience is this idea of local organizing and bottom-up agitation for the left is not new. This college campus thing has nothing to do with free speech. Nobody on the right is trying to suppress anyone's free speech. It's not what it's a canard. This is about just the left using organization to impact and destroy society. Whether the movements Occupy Wall Street, the WTO in Seattle, BLM, George Floyd, the left doesn't care. they'll use any reason to agitate and just break down societal structures. I know you've got some thoughts on that.
Well, Dan, I think you're making a really key point here, which was summarized by one of the activists from the Weather Underground going back to the 1960s. He said, the issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution. And if you think about that, what he means is that the left is constantly in a state of agitation. It wants to capsize or overturn the institutions of society, and it looks for pretext to do that. So in the 1960s, it was Vietnam. Later, it was the nuclear freeze. Then the ozone layer. It could be today climate change. It could be BLM. It could be Gaza. You can almost look at these as interchangeable placards that and the left is equally, you can equally get them galvanized on any of these things. They opportunistically move from one to the other.
Yeah, we're talking to Dinesh D'Souza. We did a movie, Police State, still available if you want to check it out on DVD. I was making the case before also to the audience, Dinesh, that you'll see the same people. When you look at people on our side who study leftist agitation for a living, there are a couple of groups that do this yeoman's work. They'll tell you this, and they can produce the receipts and the facts to back it up, that these are the same people. The same people during the 2016 presidential November to January period, after Donald Trump was declared the winner, but before he was sworn in, that were causing all the street agitation, they were the same people at the George Floyd riots, who are the same people showing up in these college campuses. Not all of them, obviously. There's always going to be new recruits and people flushing in and out of this, but the agitators are the same. And that was a great line you just gave there, Beth. The thing is never the thing. It's always about the revolution. And that's what these people are doing right now. They're paying to destabilize.
You know, I had Dan Bill Ayers, the old domestic terrorist, really, on my podcast about a year ago. And I asked him at the University of Michigan, where he had led this kind of massive movement in the 1960s, led the SDS, you know, Students for a Democratic Society. And I said, here you have a campus of 20, 25,000 students. How strong was SDS on the campus? Because if you look at the media, it looked like the whole campus was up in an uproar. The whole campus was up in flames. And he goes, no, at the peak, we were 300 to 400 people at the peak. So what this tells you is that the left has an insight, and that is that if you have an institution of 25,000 people, and most of them are want to get to class, want to go to lunch, want to go to a frat party, if you can get 300 to 400 highly mobilized and organized activists, you can, in a sense, quote, take over the campus. And I think that's what's going on in these campuses. A small, well-organized cadre made up of students, but also made up of non-student allies, as they call them, joining together to put these campuses into siege.
You know, it's fascinating. One of the criticisms I've gotten from some people is they say, Dan, you know, you're just blinded by Israeli propaganda or whatever. And I'm like, dude, you're just being an ass. Like, that's just stupid. I'm not blinded by anybody's propaganda. I keep telling people, like, yes, there are people who hate Israel and hate Jews out there that are financing a lot of this, but most of the people involved are just useful idiots. But I say, you know, that's really ironic, because one of the videos I played on my podcast and on the radio show often is Ehud Barak, who is an Israeli, was the prime minister, where he's talking about exactly what you just said. The video went viral. He's a lefty. And he was making the point that you only have to reach a critical mass of the population to enact mass change. And you would think out there, like you just said, like, oh, what, 25%, 30%? And no, when you look at the data he cites in his speech, he's talking about like 1% of the population. If you can get to do anything, that you can really overthrow systems and structures for the other 99.
That's absolutely true, Dan. Another point I want to make, which is closely related, is that the way to get the left suckered into an issue is to take their rhetoric of victimization, which they are, you know, they're being indoctrinated in day in and day out in their classrooms. And yet when they look around, it's very hard for themselves to think of themselves as victims. Even if you're on a black kid on a campus, people are actually doing backward somersaults to accommodate you. You're not being oppressed. Nobody's calling you the N-word, any of that. So you have a rhetoric and a theory of oppression, but you're not oppressed. And so when an issue like Gaza comes along, the students go, wait a minute, The people in Gaza are starving. What about if we take over a building, then we become like the Gazan people because we don't have food, we don't have water, so we can pretend like we're starving. And then we demand that the university supply food, just like the people in Gaza are demanding that the UN and the Red Cross supply food. So what I'm getting at is, in Gaza, you have people who really need food. These dudes, I mean, the dining hall is open, the restaurants are open, there's plenty of food, but they like the ritual reenactment in which they are the Gazans, the university is like Israel, the buildings can be, quote, occupied the same way Israel is occupying Gaza. It's ultimately a sick, twisted sort of dramaturgy or stagecraft of oppression.
We're talking to Dinesh D'Souza. He's a movie out, Police State. You can check it out, pick up the DVD. Dinesh, forgive me for the setup here. I'll try not to be long-winded. But a friend of mine who's very experienced in leftist organizing, who's now a convert now, he said to me that a lot of the people doing this now, the college professoriate, the people in the entertainment business, they're older, at least the moneyed people. And he said, you have to understand, Dan, they grew up in a generation where the cause a lot of them fought for or thought they were fighting for in the civil rights movement was noble. I mean, no sane person supports segregation or, you know, de facto, de jure servitude. That was a noble cause. And the thing is, they're so uncomfortable with the United States as the world's real true meritocracy, actually dissolving most of this de jure and certainly de facto racism. I mean, you're an open racist now on Twitter. You're out. You're banned. And that's it. You're canceled from society forever. They're so uncomfortable with that fact that it's almost a revolution in search of a cause now. So I know you kind of hinted to that in the beginning, but Do you kind of go along with his analysis that these are the people who are organizing? Like, they got to find something, man, because their lives are so meaningless. They want to get back to the 60s agitation again, but they just don't have a good cause. So they got to go make one up.
Well, not only do I agree with it, but I would go even further and highlight the peculiar conundrum of the progressive Jews in America. Because if you think about it, they too are in a competition for victimization. In fact, until recently, their hope was that you got racism, you got sexism, you got homophobia. Well, they wanted to add anti-Semitism. And the real villain in that story would be, if you will, the white power structure. And the assumption of the progressive Jews is we're not white. We're in with the blacks, we're in with the women, the feminists, and so on. And I think to their rude shock, they've been like kicked out of the progressive coalition by the Arabs and by the sort of activists on behalf of Palestine who say to them, no, you are white. You're part of the power structure. You're basically Israel in America. You're an occupier. So these progressive Jews are now in a very awkward position because the victimization thing was working for them until now.
Yeah. And is that part of the oppressor, oppressed, you know, matrix they have? You know, I've tried a couple of people in the audience that said they correspond with me on Facebook and Rumble and stuff. And one of them asked, well, I don't get it. Like, what is it specifically? Not about the terrorists. They just want to kill Jews because they're insane. I mean, that they just hate Jews. It's generational, a lot of them. But with the American progressive, what is it specifically about Israel that bothers them? And I said very simply, I think it has to do exclusively with merit. They don't like the idea that Israel has this small space in the Middle East. I mean, a sliver of what the Arab world looks like. You look at it on the map. It's the size of New Jersey compared to these massive countries, you know, Egypt, Iraq, Iran, whether it's Shia or Sunni or Persian or whatever. And yet they've succeeded on a piece of land with no natural resources we can really speak of. And they've done it through merit and meritocracy. And that just drives the oppressor-oppressed narrative that success must have been stolen from someone else because the world to them is zero sum.
Yes, and think about the ideology of like DEI, right? Diversity, equity, and inclusion. Essentially, the core premise of that ideology is that success is always a measure of exploitation. If one guy gets ahead of another, it's not because he's smarter, he worked harder, he sought out opportunities while the other guy sat on the couch. It's because the guy who got ahead had advantages, as they say, privileges, not available. And so by that extension, that applies to countries. Israel is, quote, privileged, basically because it's doing well. Even though it started out in a complete desert, the Israelis have made the desert bloom and the Arabs have not. So I think this is a case place where people in today's world on the left seek out the status of being a victim. And the more dysfunctional, the more your country or even individuals, the more you're messed up, the more you're seen to be a victim. And therefore, in this peculiar inverted totem pole, you have a higher place on the ladder, the more you're victimized and the more that your life or your culture is completely screwed up.
Dinesh, one more question, but what's the website people can pick up the movie Police State, which we put a good amount of work into? It's kind of an eye-opener before the election, folks.
It's policestatefilm.net. You can also see it on the Salem website, salemnow.com. Those are two good places, and it's, of course, also available on DVDs, which you can get off the website, policestatefilm.net.
Policestatefilm.net. Check it out, folks. We put a lot of work into it, especially before the election. Hand off a copy to your friends, too. Dinesh, last question. Are you as worried as I am about Donald Trump's ahead in the polls? I get their polls, you know, points in time, whatever. We've heard all the cliches, but he's ahead. I'd rather be ahead than behind, and in some cases, substantially in a lot of swing states. Are you as worried about violence in that November to January period and potentially later if Donald Trump wins from these lefties? It appears now that there's almost no limitations or emergency brakes on their behavior anymore.
I agree that I think that from the left's point of view, if there's one thing, one principle that's widely accepted on the left is that nothing is going too far to stop Donald Trump. So their strategy now is lawfare, but we can see from the case in Palm Beach, we can see even the Supreme Court taking the immunity case, this legal stuff is not really working out the way that they had hoped. And they cannot confidently say even now that despite this plethora of charges, there's going to be a single conviction before the election. There might be, but there might not be. And even if there is, and even if they jail Trump, he might win anyway. In fact, that may cause him to surge in the polls. So I think the left is like, wow, this kind of no-fail strategy that we thought we had isn't really panning out. So what next?
Yeah. That I'm really terrified. I know, you know, you and I have, we're friends, we've spoken personally about this. They really freak me out. You and I both know conservatives, we have this natural emergency brake on behavior, which is, you know, faith and God-given rights. You're not going to violently attack someone else because we believe in that. Up next, another one of our fan favorites, Julie Kelly, the author of the book January 6th, but our next sponsor first. Folks, Helix Mattress, I got to tell you, I'm sleeping better and feeling better thanks to my new Helix Mattress. Got a new one. Everyone in the family loves it. Everyone's got one now. The Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including their award-winning Lux and Ultra Premium Elite Collection. The Helix Plus is a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and the Helix Kid Mattress is designed for growing bodies. Take the Helix Sleep Quiz. Find your perfect mattress in under 2 minutes, and your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door free of charge. Helix offers a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress. Every Helix mattress has a hybrid design, combining individually wrapped steel coils in the base with a premium foam layer on top. It's the perfect combination of comfort and support. I absolutely love it. It's the best mattress I've slept on. But the setup was fast and super easy. Helix is offering up to 30%. It's a big savings off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners. Here's how you get it. Helix, it's H-E-L-I-X. Go to helixsleep.com/Dan. HelixSleep.com/Dan. It's our best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now. We talked with Julie on the latest revelations about the Trump documents case and how Jack Smith may have planted some documents for a stage photo op. Let me get to one of our most popular guests, maybe our most popular guest. We'll have to do a guest popularity contest, but I'm sure she'll win. One of the best reporters in the business right now doing actual journalism. Our good friend, Julie Kelly. Julie, thank you for coming on. You've been very busy today. I see all these media appearances you've been doing. You're on WMAL twice, just so you know. You did the morning show with Larry today, right?
I did with Larry, and then yesterday with Vince Coladay.
So you are really saturating the Washington, D.C. market, which is great. So all you D.C. swampies, we're going to shove Julie right down your throat for a little dose of truth ipecac. Julie, I wanted to get to this because I found this on your Twitter feed. You've been doing some amazing reporting on the Trump Mar-a-Lago documents case, another, you know, farcical embarrassment to justice. And there's a theory going around out there that this may be another Russia hoax type incident because the documents that came up from the GSA were in a specific order. The General Services Administration ships these documents to Mar-a-Lago. And you know, a reasonable person looking at this, like, why were they out of order when the FBI got in there? Was something planted in there? Was this a setup? Your general thoughts on this and what you found through your reporting.
So, Dan, there are two different sets of boxes. There were a few different sets. So they had the set of boxes that left with Donald Trump after the end of his presidency, were sent to Mar-a-Lago, you know, January of 2021. But to your point, and what is raising a lot of suspicion, are these close to 100 boxes that the General Services Administration, this is the federal agency that handles presidential transitions, that they housed all of these boxes in a storage facility outside of Washington. And then in September of 2021, those were finally shipped to pallets worth, by the way, to Mar-a-Lago. So the question is, were any of these alleged classified documents found in those boxes? If they were, how could Donald Trump or anyone be held accountable when they were basically in the government's custody for almost 9 months? And how could he be charged with willfully retaining records he didn't even know were inside of those boxes? So this is one of the many questions being raised in this case. And again, kudos to Judge Aileen Cannon, who, but for her, we would not be learning any of this.
So, Julie, I'm thinking as I used to do financial crimes investigations, say a simple counterfeit case. You know, someone wants to charge me with possessing, say, counterfeit money, and I'm the president of the United States. And I say, okay, listen, it's the end of the term. We're going to have the, you know, said materials transported to my residence in Martin County, Florida. And then, you know, a year later, FBI agents show up and go, oh, look what we found, counterfeit money in this box. And you're like, wait, I didn't even open that box. I didn't have that. What are you talking about? Is that why the order of the documents being all messed up, which Jack Smith had to acknowledge this, by the way, is that why this could be important?
It absolutely could be. Now, FBI agents took off with 34 boxes from Mar-a-Lago after the 9-hour armed raid on August 8th of 2022. So the question is, well, where did those boxes originate from? Were they the GSA boxes? Were they boxes that Donald Trump's staff packed up? Were they boxes that the archives packed up or White House staff packed up, the records management staff packed up? And unless you can really say that Donald Trump is the one who took these, put them in boxes, hid them at Mar-a-Lago, knowing that he was taking them, hid them from investigators and the grand jury and then the subpoena, these are the unanswered questions that now, you know, a year after this indictment, still the DOJ is so evasive on. But furthermore, Dan, what's alarming, and I know you've been following this in my reporting, what's coming out even from the Department of Justice, is that they've lost track of some of those documents. The classified documents that they claim they found at Mar-a-Lago, they admitted last week they've lost track of at least some of them. And to your point, the order that the FBI gave the inventory to the defense counsel does not match up. Another thing that Jack Smith has admitted, this is tampering with evidence. It's certainly mishandling of evidence. And this is why Judge Cannon vacated the May 20th trial date yesterday and said she couldn't even schedule another one because there are so many outstanding issues related to this case.
Yeah. We're talking to Julie Kelly. You should follow her on social media, on Truth and X. She's Julie_Kelly2. And it's worth your time. Her reporting is nothing like it out there right now, I promise you. Julie, the great one, Mark Levin, brought up a fascinating point about what you just said. These just colossal screw-ups. Again, I've done federal investigations. They're not, I mean, it's not rocket science. It's not easy, but it's, you know, you're not doing open brain surgery. Processing of evidence and chain of custody is criminal investigations 101. It's not 702. This is like the first thing you learn. You screw up the evidence, you got no case, okay? And Levin brought up this great point. The special counsel, their only investigation right now is this one. This is it. It's not like a standard AUSA, Assistant United States Attorney, who's probably juggling in different phases of the case, probably 15 cases at a time, maybe more if it's like SDNY or EDNY in New York. This is their only case. You're telling me these guys are so incompetent. They couldn't even keep the paperwork in order. They've lost documents they were alleged on, and this is the only thing that we're assigned to do, but we're supposed to trust these guys that what they say is, you know, worthy of trust and confidence, and that their word is gold. I this case should be tossed out immediately.
It absolutely should. And here's another twist, and this is something that has irked Judge Cannon from the beginning. After the Miami raid, they had the documents temporarily housed at the Miami FBI field office. The next day, Dan, they took all of the evidence and flew it to Washington, D.C., where it was then housed at the hopelessly corrupt Washington FBI field office, run at the time by Stephen D'Antuano.
No. Tell everybody who Stephen D'Antuano is. I can't believe that. I didn't even see this. Say who that is.
Stephen D'Antuano, head of the Detroit FBI field office, responsible for the Whitmer Fednapping hoax to target Donald Trump before the 2020 election. He's promoted to head of the Washington FBI field office 2 months before January 6th. He then is involved in the FBI raid of Mar-a-Lago, and all of this critical evidence is housed at two storage facilities at the Washington FBI field office. Stephen D'Antuano, the same clown who after 3 years couldn't find the J6 pipe bomber. So either it is a clown car or it is just so deeply corrupt, cannot be trusted, that any thought that they intentionally tampered with evidence, placed evidence, you can't discount anything coming out of that Washington field office.
No, and I'm not sure which of those premises is worse. Is it either gross incompetence or stupidity, meaning people with guns and badges who are destroying the Republic and prosecuting Trump are just really dumb, or the other, that they're not dumb and they're doing this intentionally? I'm really not sure which one is more dangerous at this point. And it's sad we're having this conversation because there's no option C. But I want to get your thoughts. We're talking to Julie Kelly. I wanted to get your thoughts on the records case out of Mar-a-Lago from another angle. I've had a theory for a long time. It's not just me. It's a number of other people that they needed to get into Mar-a-Lago. The FBI and the DOJ were likely terrified that Donald Trump may have had some materials related to the corrupt Spygate case where they spied on him. We know they spied on him. We have the actual names of the spies or their nom de guerre there. I mean, we have their names. It happened. Mm-hmm. I think they were afraid and they knew Donald Trump was eventually going to blow the whistle, so they had to get those documents back. Is it possible that the GSA and other government entities may have been involved in this plot by, in fact, setting Donald Trump up on the premise that we ship some documents up there, say later he has classified documents, as a venue and a vehicle into Mar-a-Lago to go look for the Spygate stuff?
I know that is suspicion. I think it is a legitimate one. And I'll tell you why, Dan. I was reading through the voluntary FBI interview from May of 2022 of Walt Nauta, who is Trump's very close personal aide, who's charged as a co-defendant, and that DOJ tried to pressure him into flipping on Donald Trump becoming a government witness. He wasn't. But as I was reading through the transcript, I thought, they're not trying to get help to locate classified documents. They are grilling him as to where Donald Trump keeps his files in Mar-a-Lago. They asked about his bedroom. They asked about Melania's bedroom. They asked about the storage rooms, where they were. Was there more than one? It became very clear reading that. My tentacles kind of went up because I thought, they're not asking about classified documents and trying to find them because it's a national security risk. They're interrogating Trump's closest personal aide at Mar-a-Lago to find out where he keeps all of his presidential files. So that could be an indicator that, yes, they were looking for this so-called binder of Crossfire Hurricane documents.
That's an amazing point. And it's something Jim's, shaking his head, because it's hard to believe in what was formerly a constitutional republic. We're having these conversations. Julie, I'll let you go. One final question here. Yesterday was a really abysmal day. The Twinkies case up in New York, Alvin Bragg is just collapsing and just a tragic hilarity. I mean, just ridiculous. A porn star talking about all kinds of inappropriate stuff. The judge just humiliating himself. Yesterday, of course, the Judge Cannon case we've been addressing on now permanent hiatus, it appears. This morning, we find out that the Fannie Willis case, doing with the guy and screwing that whole thing up, that that's going to be appealed. I mean, eventually you would think a sane person would come around and say, this isn't going well. But the left has become so emotionally invested in causing physical and emotional pain to Donald Trump that I got to tell you, Julie, I don't see them. I don't see them reversing course at all. I think they'd rather lose the election than let this guy off at this point. It's all childlike at this point.
I totally agree with you. Anyone who thinks that Jack Smith or Merrick Garland or anyone at the DOJ is going to back off now, there's no way. They're digging in their heels. You could tell it by the tone of the motions filed last week, even as they have to admit that they intentionally misled, lied to Judge Cannon at a hearing last month where I attended. Jay Bratt, the lead prosecutor, lied to her about the boxes. Now, would you think that they would show a little bit of remorse, regret?
Right.
No, the arrogance that oozes out of them. So, damn, you are 100% right. They are going to dig in their heels. They are not giving up a single inch, no matter how humiliating it is to them.
Go to Julie's X account, Twitter, and her Truth account. She highlights portions of the transcript, and she'll tell you what the special tyrant Jack Smith and his team are saying in court. It's a transcript. Liberals, that means they said it. She's not kidding. Julie, as a guy who spoke, when you're talking to a magistrate or a judge, you better damn well show some respect in that courtroom. There's zero. They talk to her like she is a piece of garbage. I have never seen anything like it. You have the transcripts on your Twitter feed.
You know what, Dan? It was so stunning last month at the hearing. Jay Bratt is addressing Judge Cannon, and she actually looked at him at one point and said, and please try not to say anything sarcastic. And Jay Bratt said, oh, Judge, I would never. And she looked at him, if daggers could come out of her eyes. She is fed up with their disrespect towards her. And I had one defense attorney tell me, I've never seen anything like this.
The
government is so hostile towards a judge. It's so openly disrespectful.
I remember being in court with an AUSA in Baltimore, an assistant U.S. attorney, and I didn't even say anything. I think I was just looking down at a phone or something. And man, did he rip me a new one. The judge is talking. You keep your eyes on the back. I mean, it's just stunning. And it just goes to show you what we said before. This isn't even about a criminal trial. This is about getting on the record that they hate Donald Trump. They hate any judge they think might be. It was a Trump appointee. This is all politics. It's all BS. Unfortunately, I got to run Julie. Julie Kelly has a book out, by the way, too. It's called January 6th. That's the actual title. Everyone who's, Dan, what's the book? It's about January 6th. That's the title. January 6th. That's the actual title. So it's a great book. And she also has a Substack you should subscribe to. It's amazing. Julie, thanks a lot for coming on. We really appreciate it.
You're the best, Dan. Thank you so much.
She's awesome, folks. Julie Kelly. I mean, no one breaks it down better. That records case out of Mar-a-Lago is an even bigger disaster than the Stormy Daniels debacle. Just go to her Twitter and look at the transcripts. It is falling apart everywhere. This is what happens when it's not about the law and it's about politics. Up next, a rant that came out of nowhere. It's where all the good ones come from. But let's get to our last sponsor first. Your last chance to celebrate the GenuCell Skincare 25-year anniversary with an extra 25% off their already awesome Mother's Day sale prices, making this Mother's Day sale GenuCell's biggest sale ever. And right now, get GenuCell Skincare's best-selling, most popular package featuring Gen 90 for immediate results in minutes and top-selling under-eye bags and puffiness serum for over 70% off. Say big on all GenuCell top-selling products for a younger, more youthful-looking you. Troubling forehead wrinkles and fine lines gone. Skin redness and dark spots gone. Get those pesky bags and puffiness. Let them disappear right before your eyes. GenuCell guarantees you'll see results in less than 12 hours or your money back. Celebrate that special woman in your life this Mother's Day with the world's best skincare for once-in-a-lifetime prices. For one more week, get 70% off, 70, plus an extra 25% anniversary discount off top-selling packages during GenuCell's Mother's Day sale. Once the sale's gone, it's gone. Order right now and get the GenuCell jawline treatment for a more contoured, defined jawline. Limited inventory available, GenuCell.com/Dan, GenuCell.com/Dan, GenuCell.com/Dan. Visit now, get a free spa box with two bonus gifts and free shipping. GenuCell.com/Dan, GenuCell.com/Dan. Look, folks, the courts aren't going to save us, okay? The Republic, as you knew it, is now dead. It's our country. We got to save it. As my friend Ginny always tells us, we are the leaders we've been waiting for. Don't wait for someone else. Listen to this. any silly talk relying on the courts to save us, you need to immediately disregard. The only rule right now is power. Let me say that again. The only rule right now is power. You doubt me? Well, let me just back up a second. I bring it up because however insane this Stormy Daniels, Fani Willis, Special Tyrant Jack Smith, however crazy they get, I always hear someone, and not that we shouldn't look for a victory in the courts, that'd be stupid. Of course, you don't want to lose in the courts. That's dumb. But I'm sensing this like, oh, well, don't worry. In the end, the Supreme Court, the New York Court of Appeals, and the Stormy Daniels case, that eventually they'll come in and do the right thing. No, they probably won't. And it's not a strategy to rely on them. The court system is, I don't want to say unfixable, but it is severely damaged. The only rule is power. I'll prove it to you because you might be, some of you may understandably be a little bit confused. I'm not saying we should not pursue these legal avenues. We should. Court victories are generally pretty good things. I'm just saying, like, there are people out there who have deprioritized winning in the false hope that, oh, don't worry, the courts will save us from this tyranny, when they've done no such thing. Here, I'll prove it to you. The Supreme Court ruled, what was it, a year ago, Jim, that Joe Biden has no legal authority as president to raid the Treasury and pay off a bunch of student loans because of the HEROES Act. He has none. Jim, what did Joe Biden do with student loans? He just did it anyway. Yes, he did. What do you mean, Dan? The court said no. Yeah, they did. The court said no. But he did it anyway. Yeah, he did. But the court said, but he did it anyway. Why? Because the left understands that the only rule at the end of the day is power. Power is the coin of the realm, man. Power is the only currency that matters. You're spending monopoly money while they're spending real money. They understand the currency that matters. Yours is all fake if you're relying on the courts. So any of this talk about, oh, yeah, they're going to save us in New York, the Court of Appeals, even saved Harvey Weinstein. Number one, we shouldn't even be comparing Trump to that guy at all. That's just a liberal thing, trying to associate the two in people's minds. But folks, liberals are crazy. New York is finished. The only thing you should be doing with New York is emulating Snake Plissken and escaping from it. That's it. You have zero chance in New York as a conservative of getting justice. Justice is dead. This judge has been a humiliating embarrassment. You got the mayor of New York. I already read to you his Fox News headline. The liberal, radical, communist mayor of New York, Eric Adams. And that's what he is. Fox News, May 7th. Mayor Eric Adams says, Rikers Island's ready if Trump is sentenced to jail. This is an actual conversation going on in our country right now. Because they understand what? Power is all that matters. Power's a zero-sum game, folks. The rules of zero-sum are built into the expression zero-sum. You both can't own it at the same time. It sums out to zero. What I take has to be taken from someone. If I get a plus one, it had to come from someone else who's got a minus one. Those are the rules of power. That sounds rather mercenary. Because it is. I thought we lived in a constitutional republic. That's a good one. That's really funny, man. That's hilarious. So cute. Good little boy. Good little boy. We live in a constitutional republic. We do? Really? I'd love for you to, why don't you write that up? A little fairy tale book. Wait, Evita's laughing too? Evita's inside. She's like, you know what? I like this radio stuff. I'm going to join in. Constitutional Republic. Are you kidding me? Republic died a long time ago. Now, we may be able to save it. What do you think? You were going to save it through speeches and white papers and articles in National Review? What has that done for us? What exactly has the conservative movement conserved? Hold on, I'll wait. Anyone? Nothing. So you mean these? Oh, wait, Jim's got. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Oh, he doesn't have a. He's like, no, I have sound for you. Someone save something. And then it's just crickets. What is conservatism conserved? Keep in mind, this is no knock on you. You're as pissed off as I am. You guys are warriors out there. I get it. But what have we conserved? Institutions? Even the military's fallen apart. Not because of the patriots it served, but because of the management that thinks we should be teaching people about sex changes instead of, hey, there's a bad guy, go kill him. The FBI? What do you mean? The same FBI that withheld information about Chinese spies and Democrat lawmakers, but then promulgated a fake pee-pee hoax dossier? The FBI is a joke. It's an embarrassment. Everything they've touched, they've destroyed. Everything. Institutions have been decimated. We haven't conserved anything. And it's not because of us. It's because these people in charge eventually always sell us out. They always sell us out because they appeal to our principles. And we get suckered in. The best example is ever, and this is going to be one of those things. I promise you all are going to hate me when this is over, like Jim hates me for the mask thing. He hates me. He sends me nasty grams. He complains to management. I hate the mask story so much because it was never a dumber moment in human history. Put a mask on your face. Jim, whenever I bring it up, he complains to Mary Berner, who's the CEO at a company, and she sends me emails like, please, Dan, we need to keep Jim. He's threatening to quit. Fact checkers. He hates the second Bush story that drives me almost as crazy is the George Santos story. How a bunch of dumbass, stupid Republicans were like, George Santos is a bad guy. We need to get rid of him and show the Democrats what we're about. You stupid asses. You are so dumb. That story is a legendary story for all the wrong reasons. Why does conservatism not conserve anything? Because people appeal to our principles because we have them, and that's how they own us. They go, you conservatives, man. You guys are principled, but you love God and family. Yeah, we do. Not in government. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. I teach those rules to my family and my kids. And nothing to do with government. Government, I'm ruthless. I'm ruthless. I don't want to know you. I don't like you. I hate politicians. You all suck. Everyone, you suck. I don't like you. You don't have to come on my show. I don't care. I don't want you on my show. Get out. Just do and vote for what we want you to vote for. Remember that stupid Lankford speech that time with that dopey immigration bill? I got a pen. They sent me up. I don't send you up here to do stuff. I don't want you to do anything. You guys are morons. You're all stupid. I don't want you to do anything. I just don't want you to hurt me. Just vote right and shut up. We haven't conserved anything because they constantly appeal to our principles. And this idea that somehow some court system is going to magically save us from Jack Smith and this judicial tyranny, it's not. Trump needs to win the presidency, pardon himself and every single person involved, and then go out in front of the liberal media. And here, if you're watching on Rumble, Jim, give the rare triple-barreled middle finger. We got like a fake hand, someone said. Triple barrel. If you're watching on Rumble, you're witnessing this. And just say, how dare you pardon yourself? He should act like Reese Witherspoon in Legally Blonde. But you got into Harvard? Why is it hard? He should just play dumb. There you go. You just pardon. This is unprecedented. You're a tyrant. You're a fascist. Why is that wrong? Just pretend. Just play Reese Witherspoon in Legally Blonde. Pretend you don't even. Sorry. And you just move on. Be like, anybody want McDonald's? Just pretend like nothing happened. You just pardon yourself. Be like, I had avocado toast for breakfast today. It was quite good. First time trying it. Act like nothing even happened and just move on. Just move on. Anybody got another question? You pardoned her. Yeah. Anyone want a Diet Coke? Oh, all of a sudden you got, now you object to power and you, now you guys are upset. I get it. You want to win or you want to rub each other's backs? What do you want to do? Backpacking exercise? Oh, look, let me rub your shoulders. You feel, what are you doing? You want to win? You want to conserve something? Or you want to BS people? The Republic's dead, man. You understand it's dead. Now, I'm actually very optimistic and long in the United States. I've never been more optimistic. I know it sounds crazy. Like, Dan, what are you talking about? You sound the Republic's dead. Sometimes, ladies and gentlemen, something has to die. The old Republic, candidly, was never really a Republic anyway. It wasn't. It was kind of a wannabe oligarchy, a kleptocracy. It just was. It was a moneyed class of people who bought off politicians for a long time, and the effects of that have become destruction. But even Schumpeter acknowledged in economics, Joseph Schumpeter, creative destruction is a thing. Sometimes to get and create really good things, you need to do it and build it out of destroyed old things. And Donald Trump is the ultimate agent of this new creation of a different American republic moving forward. He made the left entirely expose itself. It pretended for a while not to be fascists and tyrants. It pretended. It didn't do a good job. You and I always knew who they were. But let's be honest. They pretended. They put masks on. They put a lot of masks on. Oh, we're all about tolerance and coexistence. They were never about any of that. It was all an act, and a couple of suckers fell for it. The Mitt Romney, Jeff Flake class. They thought if you wrote op-eds in the Washington Post, the National Review, eventually liberals who want to destroy the country would go, wow, Mitt Romney looks like a nice guy. Maybe I'll think about voting Republican. That worked out really great, didn't it? We got two terms of Obama and then another term of the oatmeal god in the White House who took a dump in his diaper the other day walking outside to the Marine One. You want to save the place or not? No, I'm serious, man. You want to save this place or not? You want to screw around? Oh, the courts will save. Everybody's always waiting for some savior to come and take us. The courts will save us. The bureaucracy will save. This guy's going to, no one's going to save you. Power. The answer is power. Go get it and then go do to these people exactly what they did to you. And eventually, when they don't like it enough, they'll say, hey, that was really bad. Can we get back to a system of governing that's fair to everyone? Ha! Sounds like what we've been saying for a long time. You idiots didn't listen. No one wants to hear that. No one wants to say it. Everybody's afraid to. Especially these wuss bags in government. That's why every time you have them on the show, they give the exact same interview. They always have to, everything's got an asterisk next to it. Oh, but, no buts. Go get power and go take the country back. Go hijack the left's terms. They do it to us all the time. They want to talk about resistance. Good. Well, how about we try that? That's our thing now. This case in New York should be a massive wake-up call. These people don't care that the entire world is hysterically slapping their knees, laughing at us. They don't care because liberals want the country destroyed. And this was the perfect vehicle to do it. Thanks for checking out this special Sunday podcast. We really appreciate it. If you want to listen on a local radio station near you, go to Bongino.com/stationfinder or tune in every single day at 11 a.m. for the podcast on Rumble.com/Bongino or noon for the radio show. We appreciate it. See you next week.
You just heard Dan Bongino.